ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Lenny.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT Radio, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Joining us on today's show is Charles Horn, author of Meat Logic, Why Do We Eat Animals? Charles is an Emmy-nominated writer and producer with credits including Forget About It, Robot Chicken, and Robot Chicken Star Wars. And he has a PhD in electrical engineering from Princeton University. That's coming up a little later on the show, but first some news.
From the online newsletter, The Dodo, Malta became the latest country to pass a nationwide ban outlawing the use of animals in circuses. The Maltese parliament voted unanimously to amend the Animal Welfare Act to stipulate that it shall not be lawful for any person to use animals for performances, exhibitions, shows, or for the training thereof in circuses. In approving the amendment, Malta joins eight other countries, including Bolivia, Greece, Peru, Cyprus, Paraguay, Colombia, Slovenia, and the Netherlands, who have enacted nationwide bans on the use of animals in circuses. More than two dozen other nations have outlawed or restricted the practice regionally. In the United States, animal circuses have been banned in 46 municipalities across 21 states, though a nationwide ban may be on its way. Earlier this year, U.S. Congressman Jim Moran introduced the Traveling Exotic Animal Protection Act, which seeks to restrict animal circuses at the federal level. Animal Defenders International estimates there to be approximately 300 wild animals touring with circuses within the U.S., spurred into performing through cruelty and intimidation. ADI President Jan Creamer writes, "Our investigations have shown that violence to control animals is part of circus culture. Animals are beaten, whipped, and electric prods are shocked to make them perform tricks. It's been well documented that circuses use inhumane methods to control the animals in their performances. This brutality has no place in modern society."
Science Daily reports that biologists have documented fish playing with bottom-weighting thermometers and other objects. Play, like much of animal psychology, including emotions, motivations, perceptions, and intellect, is part of their evolutionary history and not just random, meaningless behavior. According to a University of Tennessee Knoxville study, even fish just want to have fun. The research is published in the academic journal Ethology. Gordon Burkhart, a professor in the departments of psychology and evolutionary biology, is known for defining play in a way such that it allows us to identify it in species not previously thought capable of play, such as wasps, reptiles, and invertebrates. According to Dr. Burkhart, play is a repeated behavior that is incompletely functional in the context or at the age at which it is performed and is initiated voluntarily when the animal or person is in a relaxed or low-stress setting. He and his colleagues are the first to document play with objects in cichlid fish species. There are hundreds of species of cichlids, including tilapia, but the behavior of the species they study appears unique. The team studied and filmed three male fishes repeatedly over the course of 2 years. They observed the fish repeatedly striking a bottom-weighted thermometer. The thermometer attacking behavior satisfies Burkhart's criteria for play. Dr. Burkhart found that the quick writing response seemed the primary stimulus factor that maintained the behavior. His team has observed octopuses doing this with balls by pulling them underwater and watching them pop back up. Further, this reactive feature is common in toys used for children and companion animals. According to Burkhart, by better characterizing play and observing it throughout the entire animal kingdom, humans may better understand themselves. His research illustrates how play is embedded in a species' biology. Play is part of their evolutionary history and not just random, meaningless behavior.
The poultry-producing company Perdue has been forced to remove its label that says humanely raised from its chicken. Perdue is possibly the worst offender when it comes to animal cruelty, and has been sued twice for misleading customers with the label that implies chickens were raised happily and with some dignity. A lawyer for Purdue Farm stated, "Purdue rejects the plaintiff's allegation and maintains that its labels are not misleading in any way. Nonetheless, it has agreed to discontinue the labeling claim at issue. Perhaps this agreement has something to do with the fact that undercover investigations have shown that Purdue's chickens are raised in a space the size of a sheet of paper, crammed with other chickens so tightly that they suffer broken bones that go untreated and are placed in sheds that reek of ammonia." Jonathan Lavorne, Senior Vice President of Animal Protection Litigation for the Humane Society of the United States, said, "Companies like Purdue are exploiting consumer demand for improved animal welfare for their own profit. Rather than implementing humane reforms, Purdue has simply slapped stickers that say 'humanely raised' on its factory-farmed products, hoping that consumers won't know the difference." Sadly, Purdue isn't the only one doing this. Temple Grandin, an expert in animal slaughtering, wrote that the National Chicken Council Animal Welfare Audit has a scoring system that's so lax it allows plants or farms with really bad practices to pass. If you haven't tried them, I recommend the Tasty Chicken Alternative products made by Gardein and by Beyond Meat, which are available in the frozen food section at Albertsons, Target, and Sprouts. Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with Charles Horn, author of Meat Logic: Why Do We Eat Animals? Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Charles Horn. Hey, Charles, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Charles, can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you got involved in animal issues and veganism?
Sure. Well, I was a vegetarian for many years. As a kid, I had made the connection with dogs growing up, and so it was always for ethical reasons. And I didn't really know back then anything about veganism, so I just kind of knew that I wanted no part of, this system, but I didn't really see it as a winning battle because everybody else was doing it, and so I kind of was like, I don't want to think about this anymore, I'm vegetarian, and that's that. And so for many years, I was that, and it was only like a little over 2 years ago that I kind of saw that more people were going vegan, and it felt like things were changing in society, and I kind of wanted to be a part of that and do things that, you know, would help move it along in whatever little ways I could. And so that's when I went vegan.
I think when most vegetarians realize that dairy cows and egg-laying chickens suffer the worst in the meat industry, that's a very moving point in someone's life.
Yes, absolutely. I'm embarrassed to say, and I'm sure you have many listeners that kind of went through the same thing, but, I mean, I have, you know, a PhD from Princeton. I have 5 degrees to my name. I did not know that a cow had to be pregnant for milk.
Really common.
It's embarrassing.
I know a lot of people, though. I was just talking to some students last week about that same thing, and they're like, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. Women only produce milk when they're pregnant. They never connect it to, like, a cow.
I know. It's crazy.
Wouldn't a cow explode if we didn't milk them?
Well, yeah, I know that, like, we're told, you know, cows give milk.
Yeah.
We don't take it. Cows give it.
And then you don't think about what happens, too, when, after they have their calf.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All of these things you don't know and you don't think about. You know, a lot of people who are vegetarian, they are thinking that, oh, well, you're not harming them. So, yeah, it was very interesting for me because even after I went vegan, I kind of started to read more, you know? I wanted to know everything about it. And I was amazed at how well-developed the philosophy is. Everything is just on such solid footing. It's incredible.
It seems so obvious. It seems like, you know, how could these meat eaters be missing these ideas?
Exactly.
And reading your book, I realized every time I read the title of a new chapter, I just had to roll my eyes because you have to wonder, do people really say things like this? Do you find yourself reading the comment section online after a article on vegetarianism and just thinking, you know, these people?
Yes. In fact, the genesis of the book
really?
is basically from watching friends and other people on Facebook having these arguments, and it was the same type of argument over and over and over again. Nobody seemed to learn anything.
tell us your favorite question that you talk about in your book, Meat Logic.
Oh wow, that's a tough one. I guess the craziest one.
Okay, yeah, let's go with the craziest one.
and this one I actually didn't see very often, but I did come across it as I was looking online, and it was just like, are you kidding me? You know, it's like, I can't believe someone is seriously saying this. But, you know, people were worried that humans would lose the ability to eat meat. And so they were worried about, like, some distant future time that it would be some emergency situation where you only had access to an animal and not plants. And so you're putting the, you know, mankind at jeopardy.
Wow. So, yeah. our teeth would, like, only be able to crunch up nuts and root vegetables but not meat?
And all the plants went extinct. Or, this sounds like a variation on the idea, what if you were on a desert island with a cow?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was interesting that it was, like, so crazy that it actually gave me, you know, problems at first. Like, I didn't know how to unpack that one at first. It's like, how do I... So, yeah, but it was just, that was probably the craziest one. I mean, this person basically turned something that was a moral dilemma, you know, a moral negative, into a positive moral duty. So it's like you have to be eating meat because otherwise you're putting future mankind in jeopardy.
One of my favorite parts of the book is where you have a hypothetical man justify his reasons for rape, and it sounds exactly like the kind of logic put forth by meat eaters. You say, and don't tell me that I don't love women. I think it's terrible how some men treat women. I don't condone any of that. I only have humane, non-consensual sex.
Well, the reason I kind of wrote that chapter was I had just written about 10 different ways of people giving the naturalistic fallacy. Basically, they were pointing to nature as a reason to eat animals. And I realized that, okay, I had went through each of these, like, 10 or so different ways and showed how it doesn't follow logic. It's a logical fallacy. Makes no sense. But I realized that someone will just find another way, another variation on the same theme. So it's like, unless I do something that was just stronger, that showed them really how... You can't, this way of thinking doesn't make sense, and you can't even go along this line of thinking. So I realized that I had to write that chapter in that way and show them that if you are following that line of reasoning in a human way, maybe they'd be able to see that better and make that connection.
It's like the reason evolved from God gave us animals for us to eat, and then when person took on a more scientific approach, we evolved to be meat eaters. It's more or less the same argument, isn't it?
Yes, it's similar. It's similar.
Like there's a place for animals. They're meant to be eaten. And it harkens back to Dr. Melanie Joy's work and how some cultures think it's okay to eat certain animals and then other cultures think that dogs and cats are just fine on your plate.
Yes, I love her work. What she does is, at least for me, she made the connection in terms of psychology, because it's like I was always curious as to why, and I'm sure lots of people are. Clearly, when you are forced to look at this and really go through it, you find that it makes no logical sense. Yet, everybody that we talk to and try to, you know, convince otherwise, they fall back on these rationalizations, and there, you know, there's just seems to be this mental block. And what her work does for me is it sort of helps us understand why people can't accept the logical arguments. You know, it's like we're not done just by showing them that logically what they're doing is makes no sense. And she sort of made the connection psychologically.
Right. It's the cognitive dissonance. We want to think we're good people, so we've got to think that eating animals is okay.
Yeah, and it's just this whole belief system that is set up to make us follow the status quo.
Yeah, and you know, you also talk about arguments for survival of the fittest that are often used for, you know, the reason that it's okay to eat meat, and you explore, you know, theft and slavery and murder. I mean, how is it that we can change the conversation to make it not about survival of the fittest?
Or not about dominating other organisms or our right to dominate them?
Yeah, I mean, that's the challenge, because, I mean, clearly, you know, what we can do is show them that that what they're saying amounts to that. Oftentimes when people bring up those arguments, I kind of want to rephrase it in human terms and show them, you know, just how far off, you know, what you're saying is. Like, you don't realize that what you're saying is, if we took it at its face value, you're arguing for the morality of theft, rape, and murder. and like, I kind of want to tell them that, you know, really think about it at this point, because you weren't just a little wrong. You were a lot wrong. Like, you couldn't be more wrong. So shouldn't you, at this point, recognize that something really basic is faulty there, and maybe you should read more about it, you know, and get a different point of view, because something is really wrong at the basic level at that point.
It seems to me that ethics and morality are culturally based. It's what the majority decides is ethical. For example, 100 years ago, everybody thought that same-sex relationships were sinful, but now more than half the states permit gay marriage. So do you think morality evolves?
Yes and no. I mean, not in the sense of people who say, you know, moral relativism where anything goes. I mean, that, I think, some people actually give that as a reason for not being vegan. It's just like, it makes no sense, because then you're saying there's no such thing as morality, and it just logically falls apart. But
so sociopathic.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically a way, it's a pseudo-intellectual way of being dogmatic. You know, you're sounding smart as you're saying it, but what you're saying is basically the same thing as someone who's following a religion. You just won't listen to reason, and you're saying it's okay not to listen to reason. So that part I totally wouldn't agree with, but what I would say is that we can see a progression from the time where human slavery existed and that finally was abolished, and then from there we just are slowly taking that and expanding it to everyone else. So, you know, 50 years later, women got the right to vote. 50 years later, there's more civil rights. And now what we see going on as we speak is we see the turning of the corner in LGBT community. I mean, it's clear that it's going to happen for animals as well at some point, and I can only hope that we're here to see it.
Yes. So the argument is we've always done this. It just doesn't stand up to weight anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Once human slavery fell, everything else did as well. And we're just having this long slog of fighting for that. But the reasoning has fallen. It's gone.
This is the way we've always done it is the worst excuse, and that we shouldn't, you know, even bother to say that.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, it's pretty ingrained if you try to ask people about, you know, the cultural reasons behind a lot of activities. They, you know, well, it's our tradition that we do X, Y, or Z, you know, and you try to say just because something is traditional or part of a culture doesn't always justify the continuance of that activity when we have evidence that there are better alternatives that cause less harm.
Yeah, that should never be a valid excuse if there's a victim to the tradition. And, you know, it's one thing to have a tradition that doesn't harm anyone, then go for it. But it's once there's a victim to that tradition that you can't just point to tradition and say, okay, well, who cares about the victim?
You know which one of the arguments I always find funny is the one that's we're on top of the food chain. And, and you see it, you know, you see it at local restaurants here. You know, the staff will be wearing the T-shirt. And sadly, you know, with the standard American diet or SAD diet, you look at many of the customers there, and I venture to say that they haven't done any climbing in the last 10 years of their life. And so I wonder what you how you break that one down.
Yeah, that's a good point. People, they say these things, and they don't realize that what they're saying is really morally wrong. Like, when you're talking about a food chain, you're basically saying might makes right.
Right. Yeah.
That's all you're saying. And that's a horrible, horrible moral, you know,
construct,
system.
Yeah.
But we have this notion of the food chain, and it's so wrong because, it's prejudiced, obvious, on the face of it. But I like to think of the whole situation as being more of an interconnected web instead of some sort of a hierarchical chain that we're at the top of.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I point out in that chapter is again, connecting it. Historically, there used to be a notion of the great chain of being, and that was something that was used to, you know, where whites were put higher than other races and men were put higher, mm-hmm. you know, than women in this hierarchy. And so people had that notion and used that notion to legitimize slavery and racism and sexism. And people today use this notion of a food chain to legitimize, you know, speciesism.
And it's really hard to get rid of because I keep finding myself proud that I'm an old white man.
Well,
anyways.
it's true that I think we, you know, some of us have this notion that if only, you know, we tell someone, you know, they should be able to listen to reason and you know, unfortunately, people who are brought up a certain way, it's very hard to overcome their ingrained, you know, way of thinking. And so a lot of times the way to make progress on, you know, racism or sexism is that the previous generation basically has to die out, and the newer generation who wasn't brought up on that prejudice,
right,
you know, is able to move forward.
Well, and I think you said something important there because you said ingrained thinking, but really people that are perpetuating these ideas aren't thinking. They're, you know, they're reacting in a way that they've always reacted, and they're not putting any thought into their actions or their prejudices.
Yes, you're right. It's everything is set up so that they don't have to think about it. That's why I think that there's such antipathy, you know, to veganisms and vegans, is that we're forcing them to think, and that's, you know, hard.
Yeah, it is hard because, like you said, you know, you don't want to think about, at the beginning of the show when you were talking about maintaining cows in a state of lactation, nobody wants to think about a cow being put on a rape rack and, you know, being forcefully inseminated just so they can have milk on their Cheerios in the morning or their yogurt or their cheese. I mean, that's a horrible thing to think about.
Yeah, and no one wants to think about themselves morally. They don't want to think of themselves as am I a bad person for doing this? And that's why I think some people get caught up on that, and they always say, oh, so you think because I eat a piece of chicken I'm a bad person? It doesn't even have to be personal like that. We're not talking about you and your totality of your being, you know, as being a bad person. We're talking about the practice, and we're talking about, you know, what we're doing as a society. Should we be moving forward as a society to stop this practice that we shouldn't be doing?
That causes so much pain and suffering and tremendous impacts on the environment and all other species on the planet.
Yes.
And that comes back to the personal choice thing. People who say, well, don't tell me what I should be eating. It's my choice if I want to eat meat. You can have your carrots if you wish. It's much more than a personal choice.
Yeah, I mean, it stops being a personal choice in the same way that it would if we're talking about another human. It stops being a personal choice when there's a victim. You know,
right.
You can punch air if you want, but once my nose is there, you can't punch. So, you know, it's the same way with an animal, which is an individual and a sentient being in their own right, and that's a victim. You can't do it. It's not a personal choice anymore.
We've been talking with Charles Horn, author of Meat Logic, Why Do We Eat Animals? Charles, thanks for being with us on the show, and there's so much more to cover from your book. Could you join us again for our next show?
Sure.
Okay, great. And in the meantime, where can people find out more and purchase your book?
Well, the book can be found online on Amazon. There's a Kindle version, and there's also a paperback that's available. So you can just search for Meat Logic. There's also a Facebook page. Just look up Meat Logic.
Thanks so much for being with us, Charles.
Thank you,
Charles.
If you're thinking of purchasing Charles's book, Meat Logic, why not do it at Amazon Smiles and indicate that you'd like some of the proceeds to go to the Vegetarian Society of El Paso? You can learn more about this program at our website at vsep.org.
Also at our website, vsep.org, you can make reservations for our Thanksgiving dinner, which will take place on November the 15th at the Sunland Park Holiday Inn. Our special guest speaker will be Victoria Moran, author of the book, Main Street Vegan.
And Halloween is just around the corner. Do the planet, the kids, and the animals a favor this year by giving out candy that is vegan and without palm oil.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.